Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. We welcome you to a special edition of the Todd Albaugh Show, The Trump Indictment. Along with Aaron Zomers, our producer and engineer, I'm Todd Albaugh. And on this Friday morning, March 31st, 2023, we'll go in-depth this hour on the historic news from last night. Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, became the first U.S. president, former or sitting, in U.S. history to be indicted and face criminal charges. The indictment by Manhattan grand jury was first reported late yesterday by the New York Times, followed by other major news outlets, and finally confirmed by the former president, his attorneys, and the Manhattan prosecutors. The charges remain under seal this morning, but the investigation centered on payments made during the 2016 presidential campaign to silence claims of an extramarital sexual encounter with adult film star Stormy Daniels. Prosecutors did not say whether they intend to seek prison time in the event of a conviction and a development that would not prevent Trump from assuming the presidency. A spokesman for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and prosecutors have reached out to Trump's defense team to coordinate a surrender. Trump was asked to surrender today, but his lawyers said the Secret Service needed additional time as they made security preparations, according to two people familiar with the matter who spoke with the Associated Press. The people who could not publicly discuss security details said Trump is expected to surrender early next week. There are reports this morning that the surrender could come as soon as this coming Tuesday. The indictment, an extraordinary development after years of investigation into Trump's business, political, and personal dealings, injects a local district attorney's office into the heart of a national presidential race and ushers in criminal proceedings in a city that the ex-president for decades has called home. Arriving at a time of deep political divisions, the charges are likely to reinforce rather than reshape dueling perspectives of those who see accountability as long overdue, and those who, like Trump, feel the Republican is being targeted for political purposes by a Democratic prosecutor. This morning, we'll be joined by Matt Flynn, an attorney, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, and host of Matt Flynn Direct here on the Civic Media Radio Network. He'll help us break down all the legal angles, including, does this really rise to a federal crime? And what is the process now? Will there be a mugshot and a perp walk? And what does this mean for American history? Then at the bottom of the hour, we'll welcome our regular contributor, Trigvi Olson, Wisconsin native, former Republican strategist, and now a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Is Trump's indictment the October, check that, March surprise? Dan Kelly needs to win the upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court race, and what impact does that indictment have on the 2024 race for the White House? Also joining our special report this morning, roundtable at 8:30, UW-Madison Professor Emeritus Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll, on what the numbers show. Do yesterday's events make it more or less likely for the GOP-based voters to show up at the polls on Tuesday? And should either side or both sides be worried about who turns out on Tuesday? Then in hour number two, we'll invite your phone calls on the Trump indictment. And at 9:30, Richland Center native, former NFL fullback and three-time Big Ten football champion, Badger Brady Ewing, joins us to discuss the future of Badger basketball after Jordan Davis entered the transfer portal yesterday. Who else may be pulled away by big NIL deals? We'll also talk Packers and A-Rod and ask Brady what he would do after his former teammate J.J. Watt asked recently this week, should I go speak to other Big Ten football teams? And in hour number three, more of your calls, Mr. Zomer's board game of the week, and it's Mimosa Friday. Maybe we'll make that Donut Friday. What are you thankful for as we focus in on our attitude of gratitude. But first, we have another major storm system bearing down on the state of Wisconsin. Here are your weather and other news headlines for Friday, March 31st, 2023. First of all, for WRCE in southwest Wisconsin in Richland Center, today looking for a chance of thunderstorms, a high of 61 degrees. Then for tonight, some of those storms could become severe later on in the afternoon and into the evening hours. It may turn over to a mix of snow and rain at some point, only about less than a half an inch of accumulation in Richland Center for tonight. Then for tomorrow, Saturday, that snow and rain mix continues in the morning. It'll be breezy. The sun will come out and a high of 42 in Richland Center for tomorrow. Up in Wausau, WXCO, Bull Falls Radio, winter storm watch in effect for the next 24 hours. For today in Wausau, expect rain, a high of 39 degrees. Then for tonight, rain, snow, blowing snow, up to 7 inches of accumulation in Wausau tonight. Saturday, snow, blowing snow continues, maybe another inch or so, a high of 34. And over in Amory, Lake Air Radio, WLAK, a winter storm warning in effect for later today through tonight. For today, rain and breezy conditions, a high of 38. Then for tonight, the snow moves in, blowing snow, a low of 21, 4 to 8 inches of accumulation in Amory. The snow will end tomorrow morning. The sun will come out in Amory tomorrow, and it'll be a high of 35 degrees. Those are your weather headlines today. The big news of the day, of course, the Trump indictment. We'll get to other weather news details for you after this. But stay with us. Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct joins us next on our special edition of the Todd Allball Show. This is the Trump indictment. It is 8:15 on the Civic Media Radio Network on Friday, March 31st, 2023. Welcome back to a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, The Trump Indictment. Last night, the New York Times breaking the news. The 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, the first president in U.S. history to be indicted, either sitting or former, and faces criminal charges. There is nobody that's followed this story better. There's nobody that can explain it better than our very own Civic Media's Matt Flynn, host of Matt Flynn Direct. It's a great program. You can hear it across Civic Media every afternoon from 3 until 4. He is first and foremost an attorney. He is also a former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. We welcome in our friend and colleague, Matt Flynn.
Delighted to be here, Todd, on your great show.
Well, thank you so very much. It's a historic day, Matt, and I like, first of all, to answer a couple of questions, because what I'd like to focus on, first of all, is the legalities of this. And you, being an attorney, are the perfect person to help walk us through this. First of all, what does an indictment actually mean?
That's a good point. It doesn't mean an arrest. What it means is that the grand jury has come back and voted to criminally charge Donald Trump. It's a criminal charge. We do not know at this point the exact nature of the charge, but given the history of this investigation, I can tell you this. First of all, the New York Times found out from some of its sources that there will be 34 counts. That's number one. Number two, they found out that Alvin Bragg, the DA, wanted to have Trump surrender today or be arrested. And the Secret Service pushed back and said, you know, he still gets Secret Service protection. And a lot of news media have started to say, well, it'll be 2:15 Eastern time on Tuesday. And nobody has any confidence in that because there has to be some security things worked out. But basically, he has been criminally charged. The charges are sealed and they'll be unveiled when he's brought in for arraignment.
Want to make this point. You've said it on your show as an attorney. You've used the phrase, it's an old legal cliche, but it's true. The phrase of, you know, even a ham sandwich could be indicted. What does that actually mean? And the point is, it's not one person, a Democratic DA. There are actually a panel of jurors, essentially, on a grand jury.
That's true. You know, and I've represented witnesses who have been taken before a grand jury. And many people misunderstand the grand jury. The grand jury is sitting there. But the prosecutor, for instance, in a federal grand jury, doesn't have to tell them anything that's favorable to the defendant. The defendant isn't even told about it, although in this case he was. The prosecutor can use hearsay. The prosecutor can put on an FBI agent and say, this guy told me this and that guy told me that, and we are not even going to tell you who it was. And then the prosecutor can get up and say, I want you to return an indictment. That's happened. Now, it takes an awful lot of guts for a grand jury with that presentation not to indict. That's why they say he could indict a ham sandwich. That said, in my career, I know of one grand jury in Milwaukee that refused to return an indictment despite all the pressure, because it was of a very prominent Milwaukee company that had a great reputation. And there was something that the prosecutor felt was out of line, and the jury didn't buy it. So, but in this case, I think that there was so much evidence. Michael Cohen said that he went in front of him more than 20 times.
Wow.
And Trump's signature is on the check. So I think that in retrospect, it may have been a foregone conclusion he'd be indicted.
Let's look at the charge itself, Matt, and let's break this down, because I think a lot of people get caught up in, oh, well, it was just, sex with a porn star. He lied about having sex with a porn star. Walk people through, if you would, Matt. It's not just that. It's what he did subsequent to that. And then, if you would, talk about how this is a misdemeanor and the creativity of the Manhattan DA to try to make this into a federal case.
Right. And that's going to be one of the tough obstacles for the DA in prosecuting this. Here's the deal. If Donald Trump, as a private citizen, had sex with a porn star, she threatened to expose him and he gave her $130,000. That is not at all a crime. In fact, she may be guilty of the crime of extortion. So that he's on the extortee end. But in New York, there is a statute that says that if you put a false reason in your business records for a payment, and you don't even have to be a public company, but you say this is legal fees or this is a charitable donation, it turns out you're paying off a porn star, that's a misdemeanor. Now, a misdemeanor is a crime that's only punishable by a year or less in jail. And most people don't go to jail for misdemeanors, certainly not first offenders. So how did he get to a felony? Because the rumor is it's going to be felonies. And how did he get to 34 of them? Well, it turns out there were probably several payments. Turns out Michael Cohen took out a HELOC. A HELOC is a home equity loan that you get from a bank. You put up your home as collateral. Mm-hmm. And in that, probably he didn't say why he was doing it. I mean, he'd be out of his mind to say why he was doing it, given all the skullduggery here. Then you have the question of conspiracy. Conspiracy to commit a crime can be a felony. And you also have, what was the reason that Trump did it? Trump said, well, I did it because I didn't want to lose my marriage to Melania. And a lot of jurors will agree, will understand that. Mm-hmm. However, it was a week or two before the presidential election, and it was quite clear that this would have had devastating impact. And so if he did it as a campaign contribution to himself, even to himself, it has to be reported. So you put all that together, you come up with felonies. Every check, every conversation with a bank is a separate offense. And the final thing I'll say, Todd, is prosecutors do this. They charge you with 34, hoping you plead guilty to one or two.
Great explanation there, Matt. And right or wrong, this is a bit of a risk on the DA of Manhattan, because it's a bit of creative prosecution, a bit of creative lawyering, if I can say that, to up this to a federal charge.
Yeah, when you say federal charge, it's a state charge. But what it is it's a violation in some cases of federal law, like the campaign contribution thing. That said, remember Al Capone. Al Capone murdered hundreds of people. He murdered everybody, but they got him on income tax. And his lawyers said, they're just being creative. And they said, damn right. And they sent him to jail. In this particular case, Alvin Bragg has what he has. You know, the guy that has a stronger case is Merrick Garland, Fannie Willis, and Jack Smith. You know, the business of the insurrection, the business of extorting Brad Raffensperger. And this may have a domino effect as a result of what Bragg did.
Let's walk through what happens next. Matt, you brought this up. There are reports this morning that the actual surrender may happen on Tuesday. Major Garrett of CBS News last night made this point. I thought it was well said. if you remember, those of us who are old enough to remember the alien Gonzalez fiasco down in Florida, or the O.J. Simpson white Bronco crusade when he got arrested, this will be all over the news media on Tuesday. This will be a television show unto itself. What happens next from here?
So what happens next from here is, and these are kind of interesting because DeSantis comes into this. Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution says that if somebody flees the state, and Trump is in Florida, and he's fled New York in a sense, because that's where the crime was, quote, shall be delivered up to be transferred to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. DeSantis has said he will violate that. He said, I will not extradite Trump. Now, if Trump wants to work this out, if he wants to continue to be in the press, he'll stay in Mar-a-Lago. DeSantis won't extradite him. They'll have to go to federal court. They'll send FBI agents out to Mar-a-Lago to arrest him. The Secret Service will escort him. It'll be a fiasco. His lawyer has said, no, he's going to surrender. He'd be crazy not to surrender. I mean, at some point, people are tired of the drama. But when is he going to surrender? Bragg wanted him today. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going, oh, it's Tuesday at 2:15 Eastern time. Hey, I got a bridge to sell you. Are you kidding me? They will drag this out as long as they can. Bragg will push back. And sometime, probably next week sometime, he will be brought in. And you're right. From dawn till dusk, 24/7 TV, this is going to be the show. And he's the center of it.
Which, of course, we all know he loves nothing more than being just that, the center of attention. A lot of people wondering, Matt, about the mugshot, the perp walk. In other words, the perpetrator, when they walk him through and arraign them, the whole drama of it. Are we going to see a mugshot? I understand from New York law that that is not necessarily required that that be released to the public.
There will absolutely be a mugshot. I mean, there has to be in the criminal justice system.
But will the public see it?
Right. And so what will happen is, the New York Times and every TV station will put in a Freedom of Information Act request. If they don't release it, there's no way it's not going to be released. Somebody's going to sneak it out. You know that. I know that. And, you know, so what? It's a picture of him from the side and the front and all that. The perp walk, just so everybody knows what a perp walk is, perpetrator walk. And this is kind of sad. I don't want to disabuse you of your faith in prosecutors. They'll arrest a guy in a prominent thing and there'll be no press. They'll call up the paper. They'll say to the New York Times, where the hell were you? They said, we were off on a car accident. Walk him again. they take wow. the guy out and perp walk him around the block so he can be in the papers. They're not going to do that to Trump. But look, you know what I know. There will be 500 reporters from all over the world camped out on that street. And when he gets hustled out of a car, they're going to be taking plenty of pictures.
Then you've got reports whether he goes to handcuffs or not. The report was, with all the Secret Service around them, probably not going to be in handcuffs at this point. What is interesting, though, Matt, I believe New York law requires a DNA sample, a cheek swab, if you will. And, of course, that's something that's been key in another Trump case in which he's been accused of rape.
Yeah, you know, that is a fascinating point, Todd, and I want to emphasize that. You got to do a cheek swab. Well, Trump has not given up his DNA so far. And E. Jean Carroll claimed he raped her in the dressing room of Bergdorf Goodman, you know, 35 years ago.
Right.
And she has some sample of some sort of like Clinton with the blue dress type thing. So if that comes out, they are going to ask under the Freedom of Information Act for that DNA as well. I will say that they probably won't be handcuffs because they will be Secret Service. But those of you who are a little older, remember in Waukesha Court in the 1970s, there was a defendant named Philemon Amaro. And in those days, Wisconsin courts didn't require handcuffs. He grabbed a gun out of a sheriff's deputy and killed him. And after that, anybody, even an 80-year-old shoplifter in Wisconsin, has to be handcuffed. So even though probably he won't, there's law enforcement in general, and obviously Trump's not going to, I wouldn't think, pull a gun out of some guy's pocket. But that's not as trivial an issue as you think.
About a minute left in this segment, Matt. I'll give you the final word before we go to break. Matt's going to continue to join us. What does this mean for American history?
I'll tell you, I have mixed feelings. You know, I'm not a guy that thinks this is a celebratory event. This is, in one sense, a good event. If he hadn't been, if he's gotten away with constantly sticking everybody's nose in it and pulling off this criminal stuff, it erodes the respect for law. On the other hand, he's a former president. That office deserves respect. It deserves respect. This is a terrible thing for our history that this happened. And I think what we have to get through it, according to him, due process, he's presumed to be innocent, full defense. Everything you raised about the charges in this case is accurate and, quite frankly, going to be controverted. And that's the way it should be. There should be no exalting and there should be no celebration.
Stay tuned. Matt Flynn and I are joined by Trygve Olsen of the Lincoln Project and also Professor Emeritus Charles Franklin, Director of the Marquette Law School Poll. You're listening to a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, The Trump Indictment from Civic Media. It is now 8:33. We welcome you back to a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, The Trump Indictment. Joined this half hour by Matt Flynn, host of Matt Flynn Direct here on Civic Media. He is an attorney and former head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Also going to be joined by Trygve Olsen, here a native of Wisconsin, former Republican and now a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. And also Professor Charles Franklin, emeritus from UW-Madison, and also the head of the Marquette Law School Poll. Coming up, all of that, our discussion with them. But first of all, we want to go quickly this morning to Kara Foster in Weatherology. Kara, we don't have a lot of time this morning, but the big news weather-wise, also a story in and of itself. This is a major storm. People in Amory and Wausau may see several inches of snow, maybe some ice. Looks like potential of severe storms in Richland Center. Please fill us in.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a busy day, and it's just going to keep getting busier. So basically, the gist of it is, of course, the central and northern portions of the state are going to be focusing on the winter weather that's coming our way. So there's still a winter weather advisory in effect until 10 a.m. this morning for Amory, but there will be another winter storm warning beginning at around 4 p.m., and that will continue until 7 a.m. Tomorrow morning. There's currently a winter storm watch for Wausau. I believe they're kind of waiting to see kind of how intense the winds are, but they're basically waiting until about tonight, or I guess really late tonight, Saturday morning at 1 a.m. is a winter storm watch that begins, and then that goes until about 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Richland Center, as you mentioned, they're going to be focusing on severe weather. So basically for them, it's going to be a severe weather threat today. Biggest threats are heavy rainfall, gusty winds, and large hail. Thankfully, they're on the kind of outer skirts of it, so not too far into the center, but definitely well into that severe area. So they're hitting a high of 63 today, just looking at some showers and thunderstorms likely. Wausau is looking at some rain likely throughout most of the day. They'll see some showers and thunderstorms as well. They're reaching a high of 40, easterly winds gusting up to 30. And Amory is going to see showers and thunderstorms as well, reaching a high of 38, but easterly winds will come in fast, gusting up to 40, so cooling down very fast throughout the day. So as they head into tonight and as that winter storm warning goes into effect, freezing rain, thunderstorms, snow, sleet, everything in between, basically dip down to 21, north winds are 25 to 30, gusting as high as 50. So travel is going to be very, very tough as you go further east and north with this system. As far as accumulation, probably about 5 to 10 is expected throughout the Amory area. Certain areas throughout the state could see around 10 to 12, depending on how heavy the snowfall is. Wausau will also see the snow showers begin. They'll dip down to 26. Northeast winds still gusting as high as 40 there. They'll see a little bit less, probably about 5 to 7 is what's expected as well. Definitely some heavy snowfall, and that will actually continue more so into tomorrow morning. And as I mentioned, Richland Center is just mainly focusing on that severe threat. Showers and thunderstorms likely dip down to 31. The southwest winds are going to gust as high as 30. Then the weekend, Saturday is going to be, you know, still a little bit rougher. We're still going to be seeing some leftovers, rain and snow showers throughout the morning, but then everyone will get some sunshine throughout the rest of the day and starting to warm up, and then partly cloudy, calmer for Saturday night, and then Sunday, maybe a dash of rain and snow throughout the state, very scattered, but it's only 20%. But other than that, sunny and much warmer, highs in the upper 40s and lower 50s. So definitely just keep a weather eye out today, especially those of you that are in the south portion of the state. And if you're in the central and northern portions, just drive as carefully as possible. And if you don't have to go out, I just wouldn't. I'm meteorologist Kara Foster.
A foot of snow on one end of the state, potentially, and potentially tornadoes and hail on the other end of the state. It is March in Wisconsin.
Right? Truly is.
Thank you very much, Kara Foster. Have a great weekend. We appreciate your outstanding work this morning. Have a great day.
Oh, thank you. You as well. Stay safe.
You as well. Thank you very much, Kara. Again, our special report this morning on the Todd Allball Show, the Trump indictment. We are joined by an outstanding panel of guests this morning. Matt Flynn, host of Matt Flynn Direct here on the Civic Media, Trigvi Olson of the Lincoln Project, and also Professor Charles Franklin of the Marquette Law School poll. Gentlemen, we appreciate all of you being with us. Trigvi, I want to go to you first. Matt set this up perfectly in the first segment, went through the legalities of this. I want to ask you from a political standpoint, as a former Republican strategist and now with the Lincoln Project, we have a major national implication race coming up here on Tuesday in Wisconsin with the Supreme Court. It is thought that Judge Janet Protasiewicz is leading, by all accounts that we've heard of, former Justice Dan Kelly, the conservative. We've talked about this before in politics, the infamous October surprise, that last-minute thing. How does this play, the Trump indictment, in the race coming up on Tuesday for Wisconsin Supreme Court?
I hate to say it, but I think it's hard to say. I think Charles might have more insights into that than I do. It's a weird phenomenon because you have, unlike elections past, In the Trump era, you have a percentage, we have some polling numbers that we're going to be putting out that I've talked about before, Todd, that suggest, somewhere up to 25-30% of the electorate are political extremists, maybe higher, and completely intolerant of the other side. And I think what's happening to Trump probably jacks turnout even higher on both sides. But it's hard to say. You got to kind of think it gives some momentum to Kelly, potentially, I think. But because they're going to use that to really mobilize. They're out to get us. We've got to control the courts.
I think
the fact that it's in the courts probably makes that more likely that Republicans can use it more than Democrats.
I have to believe they've worked through the night. There's already a digital ads out there, if not going up now, going up today at some point, basically doing a digital version, a campaign version of what Trump's trying to get people to do, go out and protest in person.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're certainly going to try and make one protest action for those voters who are in the state of Wisconsin, get out and vote for Kelly.
And that
is what they can do to protect Trump. And, they have a much larger set of people who have voted twice for Trump than were going to turn out in the election for the state Supreme Court prior. So, they can use this as a mobilization tool. And there really is no persuasion that they have to put into it other than they're out to get you.
Professor Charles Franklin, nobody knows Wisconsin voters better than you. You guys have been outstanding throughout the last few years when you've been doing this at Marquette Law School, this polling. What are your numbers showing? You talk about turnout with this via every election. What does turnout mean, and should both sides be concerned coming up on Tuesday?
Well, I think both sides have to be concerned given the past history of close Supreme Court races. Remember 2011? And 2019 were both decided by just 6,000 votes, both conservative wins, and in 2019, a come-from-behind win as well. So we certainly have the examples of this. I'm certainly expecting high turnout. Our record high for a Supreme Court race without a presidential primary on the same day is 34%. Whereas in midterms, we'd normally see something in the 60s. So the April turnout is always going to be a lot lower. The question is, are we coming close to that past record or not? I think we might do that. The one caveat here is there are only 5 days to go to the election, so there's not a whole lot of time to pursue mobilization. I've been watching my email this morning to see if the emails I get from the Kelly forces are out talking about this. And at least as of a few minutes ago, they have not sent me an email. But I'm sure looking forward to seeing how that comes out and whether they're trying to use that in their mobilization that's aimed at Republican voters. And they've certainly done a lot of get out the vote efforts. this is adding a little bit to that, perhaps. I think the biggest thing would be, can this boost turnout in the rural parts of the state that have become extremely Republican in November elections, but we're less sure about whether their turnout will rise in general in an April election, whereas the Southeast, Dane County, the Wow counties around Milwaukee, always have high turnout, look like they're on a trend for especially high turnout now, whereas the North and West so far don't look exceptionally high. Will this change that? Because that would be Trump country, and extra mobilization would probably help Kelly there.
Matt Flynn, you've worn a lot of hats. As we said in a recent meeting, I'll clean it up a bit for radio. We've seen some stuff between you, me, and Trigvy over the years. As a former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Janet Protasiewicz already under attack in some pretty sleazy ads over the last few days via radio, TV, and otherwise. What does this mean from a Democratic side, from the Protasiewicz side? How do they handle this indictment of Trump?
I'll tell you, I have a slightly different perspective. I think that this helps Protasiewicz, and I'll explain why. And I think that it implicates the 8th Senate District in the suburban Milwaukee right now. Jody Habersinickan is our candidate. And here's why I say that. First of all, in the Wow counties and in suburban Milwaukee, there are increasingly numbers of people who are Republicans, and they're conservatives, but they really don't want Trump. I mean, they really don't want Trump. Now, even if they think this is a politicized prosecution, I do not think that this drives them to turn out for Trump. And there may be some and some independents who want a Republican party of, say, Romney, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, but not Donald Trump and Marjorie Taylor Greene, who will turn out. And Janet Protasiewicz, for all they say about her, was a prosecutor for more than 20 years and a pretty tough one. The second thing I do want to say as well is that in the 8th Senate District, and to a lesser extent in the Protasiewicz race, Robin Voss is not popular at all with really right-wing Republicans. I mean, he really is not. He was almost beaten by Adam Steen in a primary, and this is a 29-year-old guy with no credential to be in the legislature. So the people in Dan Kunodal's district, I say his because he's running, frankly, are going to be people who are confronted with a candidate who's supported by Voss. I don't think there's a lot of enthusiasm for Kunodal. I don't think there's a lot of enthusiasm for Kelly. I think Jennifer Doro would have been a stronger candidate, quite frankly. I've had a number of Republican businessmen in Milwaukee who are my friends who said, you know, I wish she'd been nominated. So this is a very, I think both Charles and Trigvy are exactly right. It's impossible to completely predict, but there are two races that are impacted by this. And I personally think that it does not energize the MAGA base enough to offset what's going to happen for Janet Protasiewicz.
The MAGA base, Trigvy Olson, that is the question a lot of people are looking at in the 2024 race for the White House. A lot of theories out there that this, I was watching your boss, Rick Wilson, the head of the Lincoln Project, the founder, yesterday on a special broadcast Lincoln Project put out. He said this essentially sews up the Republican nomination for Trump in 2024. Agree or disagree?
No, I agree with Rick on that. I think, you know, all of us are kind of in that same spot and have been for a while. You
and
know,
why is that? Why do you feel that way?
You know, the thing about Trump is, and I would be interested. I know Charles, they just had some numbers on a head-to-head between DeSantis and Trump. I mean, what we've seen consistently is, you know, Trump has about 40% that is pretty much locked in a Republican primary. And this is only going to mobilize and motivate them more. And, you know, if you wonder how this is playing within the national Republican primary, all you have to do is look at DeSantis' statement and the fact that he's having to rally towards Trump. And he backed off pretty quickly from the initial statement that he made where he's, you know, he said, I don't know much about making payments to porn stars, to I'm not going to let Manhattan, George Soros funded DA, take a Florida resident. So
right, exactly. Very interesting. Charles, just a couple minutes before the break, ask all you guys to stick with us through the break. About a minute left, Charles. What are you seeing? We can pick it up after the break. What are you seeing initially on these Trump DeSantis numbers?
Yeah, I think you see the immediate rally behind Trump that you've heard from virtually every Republican elected official, including DeSantis, you know, sending some signals of support for Trump and especially criticism of the Democratic prosecutor as they see it. I think it does have that short-term effect. I'm less certain and genuinely uncertain about what happens over the next weeks. And how do these folks like DeSantis shift their campaign rhetoric a little bit after the proceedings begin with Trump?
You're listening to a special edition of the Todd Elball Show, The Trump Indictment, from Civic Media. More after this. Stay with us. The time is 8:50 on the 31st of March, a Friday, 2023. You're listening to a special edition of the Todd Elball Show, The Trump Indictment. We are joined this morning by the host of the Matt Flynn Show, attorney and former head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Matt Flynn, the former Republican strategist and now senior advisor with the Lincoln Project, Trygve Olson, and Professor Charles Franklin of the Marquette Law School poll. Before we went to break there, Charles, I want to finish this up. Numbers that you're seeing in your polling nationally on Trump and DeSantis, just to kind of cap that off, where do you see, I mean, again, very early in the 2024 campaign, but what are you seeing in your numbers between Trump and DeSantis nationally?
Yeah, and this is not to predict the outcome, but it's to say, what are the tensions within the party right now? Mm. And what we see is Trump at 40%, DeSantis at 35%, and then nine other candidates getting 5% or less. But what's so interesting is that the Trump supporters, the folks in the party that like Trump, also like DeSantis. And that's really important because it means DeSantis is a threat from inside the Trump house. How that plays out now with the indictment and anything else that comes after this, I'm not prepared to predict. But that's what's unique about DeSantis. He's not coming from the anti-Trump wing of the party, which is certainly a minority of the party, but he's really a threat from inside. Does this boost Trump so much that DeSantis fades? I'm not ready to predict that one way or another.
Matt made a great point the first part of our program this morning, and I agree with him. I don't find this, as someone certainly, there's a bit of schadenfreude on my part. I'm not disappointed by today's news from a political standpoint, but as an American, I find this a solemn time. I find it a sad time for America to see a president go through the office of the presidency. I'm not joyful this morning in any way. But I think it's also important that, you know, the sexy story today is Trump. But more importantly for people in Wisconsin, it is this Supreme Court race coming up on Tuesday. And as Matt alluded to, this special race to fill Alberta Darling's seat in southeast Wisconsin. Charles, do you have any numbers or kind of the trends of that 8th Senate district, again, just north of Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's been a quite Republican district. But when we look at it in elections for the last more than a decade, it's been becoming gradually less and less Republican, even despite redistricting. Right now, on a normal election, it looks like it's a +3 or +4 Republican district. So it leans Republican. But the key thing is those northern suburbs have been becoming much less Republican in recent years. So how that plays out on Tuesday, probably a close race. Odds favor the Republican a little bit, but the kinds of issues we've been talking about, including the Trump indictment, but including things like having more than 2/3 of the Senate, all of those are really important and could motivate a Democratic win there.
Trygve Olson, I don't mean to use the term lightly. Nothing else comes to my mind right now. But the Republican Party, what it is today, some people call it the regressive Republican Party, it's a bit bipolar. We have people like former Speaker of the House and Congressman Paul Ryan, who have gone on the air recently in Milwaukee saying he will not attend the Republican convention, the national convention next year in Milwaukee if Trump is the nominee. But to Matt's point, we haven't seen any sitting Republican come out and take Trump on yet. What are you seeing in your job across? You talk to people all over the country on this. What's going to happen in the Republican Party? Is Trump just going to roll over people, or is someone going to stand up and have a backbone?
Well, the track record is he rolls people over. And I do think the one nuance in all of this, and it is a sad day, but the reality also is, if you're Trump and given his legal problems on multiple levels and multiple jurisdictions, the Manhattan DA being in a Manhattan grand jury, New York grand jury, being the ones that bring the charges probably works to his advantage. If it were federal charges, I think that would have been a bigger problem. You know, what you're going to see from the Republican Party is classic what you see in what in autocratic verticals. And the Republican Party, for better or worse, well, for worse, for clearly for worse, is a classic illiberal vertical. And so you're going to see people appeasing. You're going to see people who are uncomfortable with it, know it's true, be silent. And you're going to see anybody who criticizes Trump getting attacked. And therein lies the problem that Republican candidates, whether you're Ron DeSantis or Dan Kelly or Kopech, have in elections. You have to keep that Trump loyalist base happy. But in order to win elections, you have to attract those Republicans who are really uncomfortable with Trump. And I would think in a district like that, district north of Milwaukee, there are probably far more than there are in most places, because that's the kind of suburbs that have these voters who are pretty uncomfortable with Trump in larger numbers. And this will be an interesting, you know, what are they going to do? You got to think going into this, they were probably leaning towards Judge Janet. Is this enough to tip them back to Kelly or to get them to stay home? I don't know.
Charles Franklin.
Only one more bite, the hardcore.
Charles Franklin, do we have any numbers at all from Marquette Law School poll on the Supreme Court race? Not directly, correct?
No,
all right.
No, we've not polled on it. There have been very few private polls released, though the rumor is that they all point to a modest Janet lead. Remember, the two liberals in the primary won about just under 54% of the vote. The two conservatives, about 46. So just based on those actual votes, she comes into it with some advantages. But of course, we've seen shifts from primary winners who've become general election losers. So you certainly don't want to take anything for granted or read too much into that.
Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct. We have 90 seconds. I'll give you the last word, my friend. We have an election coming up on Tuesday. What would we like voters to know?
Okay. Area in the coal mine. I remember that Hillary Clinton talked about the deplorables. She lost the last gubernatorial race. The Republicans said that a Republican would never lose again if he got in. That kind of thing rattles people. Dan Knoedl, a little while ago, a few days ago, said that if he is elected, he will consider impeaching Janet Protasiewicz if she wins. I think that's toxic. And I don't say that, you know, sort of just as a Democrat. I'm just saying that when people give that kind of a statement, it has a ripple effect that I don't totally understand. I personally think that what's going to happen is that Judge Janet will win. I think that Jody Habersinikin will come a lot closer, at least, than people think, and maybe win. And I think it's because a lot of Republicans increasingly are conservatives. They don't want a Democratic government, but they really don't want something that flirts with the criminal, with Putin, that kind of thing. And where are they? And who do they vote for? And they're not going to go to Kelly, I do not think, in Knoedl. Do they stay home, or do they go with Janet, and do they go with Jody Habersinikin?
Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct every afternoon at the Civic Media Radio Network at 3 o'clock. Trigvi Olson, Lincoln Project, and Charles Franklin of the Marquette Law School poll. We thank you. This is a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, the Trump indictment. We'll be back with more after this.